What's your earliest musical memory?
Well, I've got a lot of them. I used to, in elementary school, I used to sit behind the bus driver on the way to school, and the bus patrol would go up and down the aisle shouting, silent bus, nobody talk. But I didn't think it pertained to me because I was sitting directly behind the bus driver, and the entire way to school I would be singing Johnny Cash's Ring of Fire. Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. I fell into a burning ring of fire. And I'm sure the bus driver like went home every day saying, Mildred, I got this kid. He's like singing these Johnny Cash songs all the time. I used to have an old Rolf Harris album, and I had, I guess, probably his first album that got released in the U.S. in 1962-63, so that would have made me about 7 years old, and I used to put that album on, and I would like act out every single one of his songs. He kind of had this mix of sort of quasi-Aboriginal sounds with
yeah,
a sort of weird sense of humor. He has a wonderful song. It's called Big Dog, and it was definitely an influence on one of my songs. I wrote a song called I Want to Be a Dog, and on my song, there's a sort of the music in addition to the guitar is oh, I want to be a dog. I want to wag my tail. Chase cars and knock over garbage cans. Bite the man who brings the mail. By the way, it sets off my dog every time. Sorry. But a lot of people have covered that song and have made it much more politically correct. Bite the lady who brings the mail. My favorite line in the song, I want to be a dog. I want to dig big holes. Oh, I want to be a dog. I want to dig big holes. I want to flirt with French poodles and basset hounds and pee on telephone poles. And a lot of people, when they record it, they kind of drop that line. But it's the biggest laugh line in the song.
Oh, boy. What's your earliest musical influence?
Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Really?
Alvin, yeah, the original Alvin and the Chipmunks, the ones from the late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah.
But Alvin and the Chipmunks, I mean, you know, he was the original bad boy of children's music, and or bad chipmunk. I remember the very first flyer I put out advertising my first album. I actually headlined it, and it said, picking up where Alvin and the Chipmunks left off.
Oh, boy.
You know, here was David Seville wanting the Chipmunks to make these nice, pleasant songs, and Alvin would always go off and tell the truth.
Did anywhere in there, did the Shel Silverstein come in as some sort of
secondary? Shel Silverstein came in, but only as a late influence. His big book, his big, you know, Where the Sidewalk Ends.
I think he made two albums of those books, and I have one of them, and I can't remember which one it is.
Okay, then the other one was A Light in the Attic. I think Where the Sidewalk Ends was first, and that came out either in 74 or 75, and that was the same year that my first album came out. So I can't really claim him as an influence, but I think we shared the same, you know, zeitgeist. You know, there was something in the air at that time that produced his sensibility and mine. Now, I think he's probably one of the best children's writers around in terms of the kind of stuff he was writing and his sensibility and his acerbic wit and his sense of humor. And maybe on some subliminal level, he did influence me because before he became a writer, he was also a cartoonist and he was also a songwriter.
Well, the thing is, have you listened to any of his songs?
Oh, yes, yes.
It's a wonder that nobody went after him for.
Well, I'm talking about even the older stuff because I actually have his first two albums, and they were, I think they came out like in 62 and 64.
Oh,
really, really old stuff. I mean,
and then there was a boy named Sue that he
right. He wrote that. He wrote I'm Being Eaten by a Boa Constrictor.
Yeah.
He wrote a lot of stuff.
It seems your stuff seems to have taken off where his left off because he didn't put out. He just did those two albums of children's stuff, and then all his other stuff is pretty amazing too.
Well, those children's albums, actually, they're really sort of him reading poetry from the books,
basically.
Yeah,
but
it's
more spoken word stuff than it is. I mean, it is
right,
poetry.
Yeah, he's being brought in as a poet to read his poetry, right?
You
know, it's very interesting. I actually physically ran into him once.
Really?
I mean, physically ran into him. I was down in Key West with my wife and her sister, and we were walking down the street, and we rounded a corner, and I literally, boom, bang, right smack dab into him. Just we collided. We physically collided, said excuse me, and then kind of walked on. And then I turned to Ronnie, my wife, and I said, I know that person. And I turned around, and just as I turned, we were at maybe 25 feet later, turned around, and looked at him, and right at that moment I turned around, he turned around. And we both kind of looked at each other and gave a little wave and then just walked on silently, didn't say a word.
So did he know who you were?
Well, I think he did, because his poetry editor at the time was William Cole. And I had met William Cole a few times and gone to his apartment in New York City and given him some of my early albums. William Cole in the 50s did a lot of poetry anthologies of humorous poets.
Oh.
And he told me at one point that he sent my albums down to Shel Silverstein because he was good friends with him. I mean, he was really the editor that was responsible for Shel Silverstein's kind of ascendancy as a poet. I had gotten an early fan letter that I used a lot in my promotional materials back then, and it said, "Wicked Joy, you are a Shel Silverstein with hair." So, I always loved that quote, you know, because he was bald and I was young.
Yeah.
And so it was a great quote. At one point, Sesame Street actually had asked me to write some songs for Big Bird. Big Bird actually ultimately covered one of my songs, but none of the ones that I wrote for them, for Sesame Street. The theme was going to be children's liberation. And I wrote a song, which is actually one of my favorite songs, called "We're Marching Shoulder to Shoulder." And I remember being called into the New York offices, and the guy who had my lyrics in front of him, and he had all these words circled on my lyrics. You know, "We're marching shoulder to shoulder to demand equal rights for kids. We're not just cute, we're important. We're throwing off our chains and our bibs. Down with children, we'll speak only when they're spoken to. We ain't just kids, we're human beings too, you know. We want to be heard, we want to be seen. We won't trust anybody who is over 13. I mean, it was just filled with all the cliches of the movement. We're tired of being pampered, we're tired of being coddled, we're making Molotov cocktails from baby bottles." That was what I remember distinctly he had circled, you know, with a question mark, you know. So
where's your favorite places to play?
I love going out west. I mean, I live on the East Coast, so going out west is fun. I'm California, Oregon, Washington State, Texas, you know, any place out west. Arizona, I mean, I do a lot of touring out that way. Playing on the East Coast is not bad because I can get there and back in a day, and so it's, you know, it's home. You know, I've done some shows in Europe and some shows in Canada, and you know, it's juggling kind of my home life and my normal everyday stuff with what I do, which is getting and visiting schools.
Now, is it just, do you just play in schools, or do you play any other?
Mostly schools and libraries. My song in Juno kind of changed things a little bit for me in that people are more aware of me nationally, but most of my work is still in schools and libraries.
I'm glad that song was in the film, because it's a wonder that I haven't discovered your music a long time ago.
Is that where you first came?
That's how I found it,
I mean, and that's happened a lot. It's opened up a lot of people to my material, and it's reacquainted me with a lot of people who knew my stuff way back when.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's also, I think, exposed me to a lot of people who have not heard me. Because, as I said, I've spent 30 years playing in my own little, you know, small sandbox until Juno broke, and now it's a much bigger beach. I've always been interested in sort of having people know who I am. I've always wanted to do it on my terms. I mean, I'm not about to write a song that would just simply be popular because it's popular. I mean, it has to come from my heart. It has to come from my soul. And it has to really be me. I've probably gotten more airplay since Juno came out than I have in the last 33 years.
Yeah.
I had my own TV show for a couple of years.
Really?
And I mean, it was one of these things that did really well and won 2 Emmy Awards and, you know, had nothing but positive accolades, and then was promptly taken off the air because children's music, children's television, you can't sell the same amount of ad time, and our corporate culture sort of views everything to the looking at the bottom dollar.
Well, it has for quite some time. Where was it? Was it a commercial?
It was out of Washington, D.C. on Channel 7, the local ABC affiliate. It was later broadcast all across the country. It was broadcast on Armed Forces Radio and Television. It was put on cable in the classroom. It was put on about 200 stations from Alaska to D.C. It was released on home video for a while. I mean, it's a long, long story, but it's sitting in a vault somewhere. You know, I don't control it. I don't own it. So, you know, it's just basically locked up somewhere.
Too bad you couldn't get syndication for that on your own.
Yeah, I tried.
You did.
Oh,
man.
Yeah. Most of the shows were what they call evergreens. You know, we went to the Smithsonian, we went to Plymouth Plantation, we went to we went to historical, and it was an education. It was something that didn't fit. It was an educational show on commercial television, and that was the problem.
Yeah, and that's why I asked if it was commercial, if it was PBS.
Yeah, it was commercial.
Yeah,
it's a commercial network. It's a local ABC affiliate. Yeah.
So what else have you dabbled in besides?
I wrote a Passover Haggadah, about a dozen different children's books, poetry and stories, and I did a songbook of my songs. I actually, my newest book is actually a chapter book without illustration in it, and I actually I give that away on my website as a free download, although people can also buy it as a book.
Yeah.
I give a lot of my song samples away. The Passover Haggadah was illustrated by my daughter, and that's also available for free as a PDF.
Yeah.
Download. I'm at that stage in my life where it's like, okay, if people want to buy the book, fine. If they want to buy the CDs and the songs, fine. But if they just want to hear them and want to read the book, take it.
See, that's that's an whole other interesting side topic, because there are people out there that will say, no, you shouldn't give away anything. And there are those that say, if you give it away and they like it, they'll tell other people about it, and they will buy it.
Yeah. What's really governed me is getting the work out. I mean, original album from 1975, I Eat Kids and Other Songs for Rebellious Children. the liner notes, you know, talk about what really governs me is getting the songs off my shelf and having people hear them and sing them and use them. And that certainly happened over the last 30 years, even before Juno. I mean, you know, Juno certainly helped that. But, you know, the songs have been used and, you know, recorded by other people and used, you know, in all kinds of different formats. Kids in schools always ask me if I'm rich, and I always say, yes, I am, because I make a living doing something that I love doing. And that,
that's all
and
meant,
in the scheme of things, you know,
that's
often overlooked. But, yeah, I mean, my needs are pretty simple. I mean, I don't require fancy cars or fancy clothes. I get joy out of shopping at Goodwill. I mean, it's nothing. That's just what I do and who I am. You know, I'm now at the point where everything's available on Amazon.com and CD
Beautiful.
Baby and all the, you know, all the traditional places.
Yeah.
In the early years, you know, I used to sell stuff on consignment. You know, I sent it out myself.
Yeah, it's a lot easier now than it used to be. But,
well, it is and it isn't. It's easier in that everybody has an equal footing, but because everybody has an equal footing, it's really hard to, like, separate, you know, what would make it in the real world versus
Well, that's true, too.
So there, it does play both ways.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you Google children's music artists, you know, you're going to get 5,000 of them instead of maybe 50 of them 10 years ago or maybe 30 years ago. But then again, 30 years ago, you couldn't Google children's artists, could you?
True, too. Yeah, that's true. All right. Cool.
Great.
Cool.
Wonderful. That was a great conversation. I love that.
Thank you.
That was a
Thank
lot of
you.
Fun.